Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba and the Bloom, episode 297. It's Draft Champions season, Draft Champions week at Bubba and the Bloom. It's because we're thankful for draft season, but we're going to get you going here on the Draft and Hold Primer, our yearly tradition on the 15-team and a little 12-team action on the NFBC. Before we get to all that, some news, which I forgot to put on the outline, but we will talk about shortly, and much, much more. You can find me on Twitter at BDIntrick. The podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod on Patreon at patreon.com/BubbaBloom. And my co-host, as always, on Twitter at RyanBHQ. Ryan Bloomfield, how are we doing, my friend?
We're doing good, man. Just made my 41st round pick in my current draft and hold that I'm in. So I'm in mindset for draft and hold primer. I think it'll be a pretty good show. We'll cover some basics and then get into some more kind of nuanced strategy, tips, tricks, that sort of stuff. But yeah, man, I'm doing good. We the baseball forecaster is out one night early, I guess.
I saw that email. I was like, what?
Yeah. It's out. So anyone who is a renewing customer to the forecaster, you've got your PDF that you've probably already downloaded at this point and are using it to potentially avoid awkward Thanksgiving dinner conversations with family using your forecasters. So glad we could be a service for that. Always great to get that thing out the door and see everyone kind of get excited for the forecaster. So forecaster's out, and it's draft season, man. It's draft season.
It is draft season. Draft season's ramping up. You were writing like crazy for the forecaster. Now I'm starting to write again for the HQ and other stuff. So it's rock and roll season is what it comes down to. It's go time. I was texting some guys, setting up some shows for Bench with Bubba. I was telling you about, like,
yeah,
we are rolling here in draft season. The little hiatus, I guess, well, besides this podcast twice a week, is we're in full go again everywhere you can find us on our work. It's go time. The forecast, we're looking forward to checking that out. Ironically, for someone that likes to print out his stuff, I wait for the hard copy of the forecaster before I print anything out, which ironically on that one.
I'm surprised you don't write the player boxes out on your yellow legal pad.
Don't tempt me with a good time, Ryan. Don't tempt me. Before we get into the draft and hold primer, a bit of news, housekeeping for everybody. Just a reminder, we mentioned it before, but Thanksgiving is Thursday for those who live under a rock or outside of the United States of America. So there will be no live show Thursday evening. We're going to pre-record it on Wednesday. It'll drop for you on Friday, most likely, or late Thursday night. So you'll have it for you on your Black Friday specials. A little more draft and hold talk, but that'll be coming your way later this week, pre-recorded. So don't come looking for that. Ryan, a little bit of news and notes. The free agent hot stove has not really got going, but the general hot stove is rocking and rolling. First, don't think I've gotten your take on it fully yet. Marcus Semien to the Mets, Brandon Nimmo to the Rangers. The floor is yours on this one.
This is risky to do news off the cuff with me, because I miss things and it shit's not on the outline, so we'll see where this goes. I am aware of the Marcus Semien Brandon Nimmo trade. Step one,
I'm not going to curveball you on a November 25th show. I'll be nice about it.
I think it's interesting. Nimmo, like the ultimate compiler, and we had talked on the Discord a little bit. You kind of threw him in the Corey Seager bucket in terms of injuries and playing through injuries more so than Seager missing time. So that was interesting. I mean, I think in terms of just fantasy value wise for Nimmo, I think it's a pretty big drop just lineup wise, but also Texas last year, from a park factor standpoint, it was one of the worst hitter parks in the league, if not the worst hitter park in the league. Maybe that's a one-off kind of one-year thing, but I think the lineup downgrade is also pretty massive for someone like Nimmo, who I think needs good team context, needs a team that's going to run him, which we'll see. That's just another unknown now in order to produce fantasy value. Flip side, Marcus Semien, for as much of a downgrade as it is for Nimmo, I think it's an upgrade for Semien. We can debate how good Marcus Semien in the twilight of his career is going to be, but depends where he hits in the Mets lineup. But like, if it's anywhere near Lindor, Soto, that's a pretty big upgrade in terms of potentially runs or RBI or where, what have you. So that's the biggest thing. I don't really know where those guys are going right now, ADP wise, but I don't know. From a baseball standpoint, I always love a good one-for-one trade. I like those.
Over the last 10 DC drafts, basically the last month of draft champions drafting, Nemo's going around 160 right now. Simeon about 270. So big difference there. But I want to clear up the Seager's Nemo comment before the world erupts on this one, because I already pissed off half of Cardinals Twitter today, which is fun because they don't get emotional over anything.
What'd you do?
I just said
Cardinals Twitter.
I think
Sonny Gray.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a minute. But Nemo, yes, he's played four straight seasons over 150 games. Last three seasons over 23 home runs. Last two seasons over 13 steals, but the average 262, 224, 274. Like, you can work with two of those three, not bad. But to your point, he's a compiler, because outside of that, previous three seasons were like all under 100 games. He had eight home runs in each season. I know he's a different player than he was then, but now he's 33 years old. He's always hurt. Like, he's got the foot injury all the time, like that was preventing him from doing certain things. So that was more my comparison to Seager. It's like, at the end of the season, Seager actually produces better in fantasy and fewer games than Nemo does. Obviously, they don't get drafted next to each other. But Nemo's just like that boring guy that you're dealing with injuries, and it never produces like that mega season I think people hope for. That's kind of my angle on that one.
Yep.
All right, the other trade, which I know you're aware of as well, so yeah, I'm not going to throw too many curveballs at you here, dropped on Tuesday morning. Sonny Gray is traded to the Boston Red Sox for Dick Fitts, a double-A pitcher, which is apparently pretty good, but might be set for, you know, long relief role or a setup man type role at some time in his career. And the Cardinals also sent $20 million to Boston in this deal, which made Sonny Gray extremely affordable for the Red Sox. Cardinals are cleaning house. They're rebuilding this. So in that angle, I get it. I still think this is, like, if we're talking about the here, the now, an amazing trade for the Red Sox. And the Cardinals are going to, like, I saw a meme somewhere. It's, okay, we just saved $20 million on Sonny Gray. Let's go sign Miles Mikolas for 1 year, $9 million. That's the Cardinals way. Yeah. That's the Cardinals way. That's the meme. And because can't we all see that happening? Like, all of us see that happening? And now you only save like 10 mil. So thought I'd throw that out there. Cardinals Twitter is just, it's a great place to live. It's some very passionate fans.
Yes, they are. This doesn't change too much with Sonny Gray. It's interesting. St. Louis, I think by outs above average on team defense last year, they were number two, the second best defense.
Mason Wynn up the middle, man.
Because he's your guy. Even a hobbled Mason Wynn.
Yep.
Up the middle. So a little bit of a defensive downgrade for Sonny Gray. Little bit of a probably a park downgrade, depending on, you know, how he does against a lefty righty and that sort of thing. But doesn't really change much for me on Sonny Gray. I'm still super high on Sonny Gray. I think Sonny Gray is, like he will be for the Red Sox, I think Sonny Gray is a very solid SP2 mm-hmm. for fantasy right now. And that does not change. I did pick our guy, Kyle Harrison, in my current draft and hold about 10 minutes before this trade was announced. So Kyle Harrison gets further pushed down a somewhat, like, actually very deep stable of starting pitchers for Boston. So we'll see how that shakes out. Roster Resource has the ghost of Patrick Sandoval as their SP5. I'm not totally sure on that one, but there's going to be a lot of competition and a lot of depth in Boston's rotation. On the Cardinals side, I don't. Do we want the Cardinals sixth, now fifth starter? I don't
know. Well, it comes down to it. And side note, we'll talk National League prospects for 2026 on Monday's episode of Bench with Bubba. But the guy that I was already kind of drafting, and now it feels like it's definitely worth drafting, Quinn Matthews feels like he's going to get his shot sooner than later. It seemed like there was buzz around him last year. I could see him finding his way into that rotation at some point in time. Because, like, right now, again, Roster Resource, not the end-all, be-all, but Liberatore, Pallante, McGreevy, Fitts, Leahy. Cool. Yeah, that ain't going to – like, given McGreevy, I know we're not big fans of him, but in your draft and hold formats, he goes super late. He's going to get a ton of innings this year unless he gets hurt. Like, he's going to pitch a ton. So those are the kind of guys you look at late in drafts. It's not pretty, but you go with it type situations. But, yeah, the Cardinals folks, most of them are just happy to see Sonny Gray go because they can only read an ERA. They can't actually tell how good a guy pitched. And then that was the fun conversations. But I'm also a diehard Gray fan, as listeners of the show know. So I'm very biased of my boy when I see the slander getting thrown around out there. and I had to stand up. And then even some Red Sox fans were like, at best, our SP4. I said, in what world are you living in?
Sonny Gray? You sign.
Yeah. Oh, Todd Zola, the Lord. Good Lord. He told me he's more likely their SP4. I was like, no. Yeah, he was 17th according to F4 last year at pitchers. And if you believe projections for pitchers, he's projected to be the ninth best pitcher in baseball right now for 2026.
I mean, definitely there is innings risk. There is health
and
risk.
He's old.
Sonny Gray. He's an old, which again, that's a good thing. But yeah, there, you know, he's certainly not a lock. But yeah, I think SP2's, both for fantasy and for the Red Sox, I think that's pretty solid.
Most definitely. All right, let's get to it. Let's talk draft and hold primer. Mr. Bloomfield, you put together quite the setup for us this evening. We're going to go through all the basics, the strategy, a ton of Discord questions to kind of lead you through where you might have questions as a listener throughout the process. But Ryan, you are in your, I guess I'll call it your first real draft and hold draft, non-meatball related draft and hold draft of the season. Yeah. So you're getting your feet wet. You said round 41. I'm in my like third or fourth NFBC 50. So I'm rolling quite along as well. Let's get to it, 'cause we just use two terms, DC and 50s. Right. I'll let you have the floor here. Why don't you explain the formats, so the listeners have an idea what we talk about the rest of the evening.
Yeah. So let's get, some of the jargon out of the way, 'cause we say it all the time. And I think it's assumed that people know what we're talking about when we say DC or OC or 50 or whatever. Let's just even take a further step back. Draft and hold. I mean, what that is, at least for the NFBC, and this is the lens that we play draft and hold. So that's offered on FanTrax and other sites, but we generally play it on the NFBC. It's 50 players. You draft your entire team in the off season, like pretty much now through like February is kind of the peak time for draft and holds. You make weekly moves, but you don't, the 50 players you draft that's your team for the year. The format that we play is 5x5 scoring, 14 hitters, 9 pitchers. And then the kind of the difference in how we play it, me and you, Bubba, is that 12 team versus 15 kind of jargon. So the NFBC, the 15 team draft and hold, 50 rounds, is called Draft Champions. That has, I think last year had roughly a little over 5,000 teams in the format, and there is an overall component. So if you're, you know, top, I think 10 or whatever, or maybe I was in the running for, it's like top 40 in the overall, you get additional money on top of that. And obviously whoever finishes first out of 5,000 teams wins. And then you get, it's $150 entry for the 50, for the draft champions, for the 15 teamer. And then I'll let you, since I'm already starting to ramble, I'll let you cover what the 12 team is.
And real quick, MGC in the chat says FanTrax has 15 team draft and holds for $150, bigger payouts, no overalls. That's what you will see in this. No 12 teams yet. I've played over there, and a few people have invited me for like kind of like a friends and family type deals. They're pretty similar roster sizes, and the NFBC wise, 15s or 12s, it follows the same lineups where you're setting them Monday and Friday for hitters, Monday for pitchers. The FanTrax doesn't all have that, so I want to clarify that real quick. So you need to like definitely check out your league and sites rules. But for the NFBC, you mentioned the 15. So the NFBC 50s, the 12 teamers, primarily $50 leagues. They have $250 leagues and a few others. There is an overall, but there's really not an overall. Like the first place overall team gets a main event entry. I think second place gets an OC entry, and then third place, I don't get something. I guess not
much.
Like, it's not crazy. Like at least the DC, you're getting like, you know, 25,000 or whatever it comes back to you as. So when it comes to the 50s, I use them to, I, not that I don't want to win, that'd be silly. Like you can still win money, but it's definitely just like, hey, how can I build things out? Like it's definitely, it's like where the draft champions is also to get ready to build things out. But I believe there's still a mindset like, hey, I can go in, you know, $25,000 or whatever. So let's play it out. But you and I are a lot alike. We just want to win our leagues first, and then whatever comes after that feels pretty cool. But yeah, so to your 12 team NFBC 50 format, it's obviously said, it's in the name, 12 teams. You still do 50 rounds. So it's only 600 picks compared to 750 picks. So that's a gigantic difference when you're looking at the player pool. As Ryan said, he's in round 41. I'm already done with the player pool at that point. Like, I have to not, when I do my NFBC 50s, I don't have to worry about where he's headed right now. Like, it's not even.
No, you are not. So, like, I just drafted Brandon Young in the 41st round, pitcher for the Orioles, and
not a consideration.
Felt terrible even considering it, but he was the best option for me. I think, and for folks that are just kind of getting into or thinking about getting into draft and holds, I think that's, to me, honestly, that's the biggest drawback of the 15 teamer is those last like 10 rounds, those last, I don't know, 150 picks from 600 to 750 overall. It is, it can be very brutal. There's just not much there. And actually at the end of the show, we'll talk about, we'll look through some of the rosters of the best teams in the format last year. And even a lot of those teams, like there was just nothing at the end. So it is, I mean, for me, I prefer the 15 teamer just because it's the way I draft. I'm conservative. I like, you know, focusing on playing time and stability and conservative and that sort of thing. And I think that helps in a 15 teamer as opposed to a 12. And a lot of the fab leagues that I play are 15 teamers as well. So I just like to get a feel for roster build, roster construction wise. That fits a little better. Now I probably will play, I'll probably play three 50s as well in the 12 teamer. I think the biggest, for me, the biggest pro for the 12 teamers is A, you don't go as deep in the playing pool. I mean, that's what you were just saying, Bubba, but B, like you just get, I look at these draft and holds as prep for kind of the bigger fab leagues in March. And in a 12 teamer, you're just making more decisions throughout the player pool. You're picking the 12th then 13th. And then, you know, there's just more picks. And so going through that exercise of comparing players as part of your draft prep process, as part of these drafts, you do get kind of more bites at the apple and more decisions that you have to make throughout the player pool, which that's what you're going for. That's a good thing. But man, I see some of these 12 team rosters and I'm like, God, all these teams are stacked. It's just a different, it's a different mindset.
Much different mindset. It really, your depth pieces become almost not more important, because in 15s, like if you have a couple of injuries, you're pretty much host. So that depth is very important. But the way you build out your, I guess, depth and where you back up and what you don't back up initially in a 12 feels more important because everyone's so loaded, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
It's kind of some gibberish there. But that's another strategy kind of discussion point. But yeah, the big difference is the player pool depth. I prefer the 12s because A, I like to draft 12 team leagues. So it's just literally in my wheelhouse. I will do some 50s, DCs just to kind of get a feel, because I will do auctions, which is still different than draft formats. But it at least gets me the idea of, okay, how deep do I have to go at certain positions? That'll be different when I'm doing things. But for the most part, even for doing that, the NFBC 50s get me ready for it. Like I'm pretty comfortable in knowing the player pool at that point. Because you are taking those, you know, you're going 45 catchers deep and stuff like that. So you're not, it's not like you're completely oblivious to who's coming up as the, you know, the 30th catcher, even though you're not drafting them in a 12, essentially. Yep. So yeah, that's the biggest difference for me is the player pools. And I think in the 12s, it's also a cheaper entry point to try to figure out the strategy you like. Where the DCs, it's 150. So to some people, that's cheap. To a lot of people, it's not. So you, some people are much more like, hey, I still need to be competitive here. I don't want to get too crazy. And in 15s, like Ryan said, you play more disciplined to begin with just because of 15s. In these 12s, like I'm doing a draft right now. Like if I told you some of the names in that, and if you listen to previous shows we've done, you'd call me the biggest hypocrite on the planet. But I've taken so many guys outside of their normal ADP range. Oh,
Michael Harris.
I got two shares of Michael Harris. No, I took Mookie Betts at his lowest ADP. Whoa. So far. As low, I got about a pick 57. Like there's a handful of guys that have dropped like flies. And so it's a completely different build. And I just want to see how it plays out essentially. And you can do that in a 50 a lot more comfortably than a DC.
Got a question in the chat. Do we like slow drafts or fast drafts better? And I guess we should have mentioned that at the top of this. So these draft and holds pretty much are slow drafts. I prefer that there's a 2 hour, a 4 hour, and I think a 1 hour clock. You can also draft these things fast draft. You can do a whole, make a day of it, which I have done. It takes a long ass time to draft.
Like, all maybe 50 what, five and a half hours or so,
something like that. I don't know why. I guess I had a free night, so why not do it? But yeah, that's the other kind of part of this is they're slow drafts, and and get emailed when you're up and that sort of thing. And I prefer the 2-hour drafts. It's a nice kind of cadence. The league that I'm in, the 15 teamer that I'm in, like I just said, I'm on the 41st round. We started this last Monday, so we're on like day 10, and it will probably wrap up on day 11 or day 12. So that's a little bit faster for me than a typical 15 teamer. Usually it's like 2 weeks for a 2-hour draft to go, but that's another kind of key component of this, is just in the off season, a couple hours to make your pick and move on.
And a lot of people don't take the couple hours. I never do. Sure. I'm one of the fastest draft ever right now, although we started, like, I think I woke up Saturday, it filled, and we are in round 40 right now. I think it's flying by. So you can get some quickies. But another note to the slow draft, because I prefer the 2 hours. In the NFBC, once you finish the first 30 rounds, that cuts in half. So it's a 1-hour clock for the final 20 rounds.
Correct.
If it's a 4-hour draft, the final 20 rounds is 20. If it's a 1-hour draft, they stay 1 hour the whole time. Just so you know, it doesn't go to a 30-minute clock. It stays 1 hour the whole time. But you will have that kind of stuff shift on you as well if you're drafting. But like Ryan said, I set up the emails. I get emails. I'm notified. Like, it's really easy to do. Even if you got stuff going, the phone's easy to draft off of. Set your queue. It's pretty simple.
And I believe it's 1 a.m. to 9 a.m. Eastern every night. The clock stops. So if you are
East Coasters get a benefit.
Yeah, depends.
In my world,
depends on your sleep schedule, but yeah,
my sleep schedule, yes. Like, because like Saturday, this last week, I didn't have the little one, so like I didn't set an alarm for the first time in forever. And I looked at my phone, I got out of bed about 7:15, and I'm like, oh, I have like 5 minutes left on the clock. This isn't good. I almost got auto picked.
Whereas my 6-year old probably knows I'm drafting and wakes up at 5:30 and gets me up and I'm awake before the clock starts back up, which, hey, sometimes that helps. Thanks, son. Didn't time out
exactly. He's just getting ready for his turn. You mentioned the 5x5 scoring, I believe. It's a roto format. So we got that going. Positions, 14 hitters, 9 pitchers. That'll be a whole discussion point coming up here about how you break that down going forward. But anything else on the difference between 15s and 12s? I think we hit most of them. It's nothing crazy besides essentially the player pool.
Yeah. No, I think the biggest thing I probably think for new players is that cost of entry. If you're just trying to do your first ever draft and hold or whatever, try a 12. It's $50, kind of less at stake, and I think a little bit more fast paced and fun for you. So that would be my advice if you're new to draft and holds.
Definitely. All right, now we talk strategy, and this is where a lot of stuff comes into play, because I've had a lot of guys on bench with Bubba. We've talked about it on this show for the last couple of years for our primer. A lot of ways to build your team. And I say a lot of ways to build your team because certain people say, I want 27 hitters, 23 pitchers, or 26, 24. I even had 28, 22 recently. Like, you'll hear those kind of numbers. And then it's, okay, so you have 27 position players, Ryan. How many catchers first, so on and so forth, down the list. You have a chart for us, so I'll let you kick this off. It's a very – everyone's kind of got their own strategy. Like I said, most people – majority live in a similar world, but everybody's got – like, I got the show coming out on Wednesday on Bench with Bubba with our buddy Beck, who's a 50s machine. And he had a whole different strategy that made a ton of sense to me I never even thought of. So, like, everyone's got their little differences. So what do you have for, like, kind of the basics of what you see, like, the most common usage?
Yeah, that's the disclaimer for this is, ultimately, picking the best players is how you win. Doesn't really matter what strategy you have. If you pick the players that don't get hurt. And the
fewest red suitcases.
Exactly. If you pick the players that don't get hurt, you are far better off than picking players who are hurt. It's impossible to know that in November, December, January, February. So this is just general guidelines. Your mileage may vary. You can veer from this. But if anyone's kind of sitting down and saying, I have to draft 50 of these freaking players, what's a general kind of guideline? I went through last year and actually looked at all the roster builds in the Draft Champions format across all teams, but then also the most successful teams, the top 50 and the top 10 overall. Started to do that again this year and found it was basically the same exact pattern. The general kind of average roster build is for these draft and holds is roughly 22 pitchers and 28 hitters. Again, some people may prefer an extra pitcher or two. It's all your preference, but this is just on average. Of those 22 pitchers, it was 16 starting pitchers and 6 relief pitchers. Of your hitters, basically it was roughly 11 to 12 outfielders of your 28. And then really those other five positions, catcher first, second, shortstop, and third, you want to get between three and four players. I can't say, you know, get 12 outfielders, get four at every position, get 22 pitchers. Yeah, that's already over 50. But generally, at each infield position, you want to target between three and four. Outfield is roughly 11 to 12. And then starting pitcher 16, relief pitcher 6. That is the general kind of average roster build across all of the teams last year, most of them this year. And that didn't really change either. I think we had a listener question on that. Was does the team construct change between the successful teams and not? And I have not found that. It's been pretty consistent. No matter how a team finishes, that's generally how the positions go.
Yes, that is. It's pretty close to what you see everywhere, as you said. And it's like, it also comes down to like say catcher, for instance. Like if you're aggressive on catcher early, you probably only leave the draft with three catchers, which leaves you a position mm-hmm. to go elsewhere. And yeah. So it all, like Ryan, I'll say it, you haven't mentioned it yet on the show. One of the perks of the Patreon, Ryan has a draft tracker, and it comes in such like use. I had literally just made a pick while Ryan was talking in my 50, and I referenced my tracker to see what I need to do. Because it keeps track of how many pitchers starting, like the whole cha-cha that you're looking for, not to mention uses projections to hopefully you're in the 80th percentile in those things. So it definitely gives you an idea in that regard. The pitching thing is one that's always kind of, you know, messed with me, because I used to be the guy that's like, okay, let's take a bunch of spec relievers late. But then you look at all these successful guys, and not saying they don't take spec relievers, but they still only leave with six relievers there. So it's one of those, like, you need those starting pitching innings to rack up strikeouts and try to get wins. It's just an the biggest thing for these draft champions. That's why we mentioned the red suitcases, the injuries. It's as much accumulation as you can get. Yeah. At-bats, innings pitched, like as much as you can get. It doesn't always have to be quality. It's just as much as you can get, because you will get so many counting stats along the way that'll separate you from so many other people. And that's where the roster construction that we're talking about right now comes in handy of, yeah, you want to leave with 16, 17 starting pitchers. You'd rather decide between three starting pitchers for your last two spots instead of five relievers for your last two spots, if that makes sense. Like it goes a long ways in what you're trying to do. So it's a very cognizant thing that as the longer we've done this, longer we've played and talked, like I've started to pay much more attention, especially to my pitching pool. That is a very important target. Like right now in that 50, as we're talking, I already have five relievers through round 40. I might not take another one the rest of the draft. So I just know that going into it.
And I think it's a good point you made on like, which positions do I want to go three? Which positions do I want to go four? In general, how I play it is generally an inverse of where I drafted them. So like, for example, my current draft and hold, I took Pete Alonso in the, I think, second round. And so like, I think I took a, my corner was a third baseman, and I didn't pick my backup first baseman until way later. It was Josh Bell. Whereas if I waited on third base, the latest of any infield position, I took Matt Shaw. I immediately backed that up with Mark Vientos to go with my corner infield. So I think there is kind of an inverse relationship. The earlier you take someone at a position in general is the later you want to take their backup or the third string. And what you said with catchers, a lot of folks like to take too early catchers because then they're only going to take one backup catcher. Again, health has to, you know, these guys could get hurt and then you're screwed, but you have to pick and choose your spots of where you're going to have depth and where you're not. And I think in general, where you feel you have the earliest, most stable hitter is where you want to back up that spot the latest in the draft, if that makes sense.
And what I'll also add to that is when it comes to catchers, and I won't talk catchers the entire show, but it seems like it's the easiest one to walk away with three instead of four, because A, if you take one early, but also if you're going to take a zero from any position, catchers is not the worst one to take a zero from.
Agreed.
So that's the thing. It's like, if for some reason, if you have to put an injury guy in there to take a zero, you don't want to take a zero anywhere. But if you have to pick any position in your starting offensive categories, catchers is where you're like, okay, I can live with that, because the fourth string catcher I might have draft it, like not even fourth string in on your fan, like round 48 catcher probably isn't doing much for you anyways. So that's where you kind of start looking at things and you're like, okay, and there's a reason we do a handful of these. It's like the reps, all of a sudden you start thinking, like Ryan mentioned, you took third base late. Like I've already figured, okay, second base started a bad position. So I'll go like nail first base, shortstop, do these things, and I'll take a second baseman, but then I might like double up second basemans like real quick. And then I'm like, I got three that I like and I'm done essentially. Like I'm just gonna walk away with three second basemans, and but like I'm not like all three I could see starting type thing. Like actually, it'll just different strategies like that.
In my draft, I mean, kind of same thing, but just the opposite. I took an early Ketel Marte at second base, so I didn't need to take – well, maybe that's not the best example because my man gets hurt all the time. But
health history, yes.
I did back him up with Nick Gonzalez, but very late. But I waited on shortstop. I waited until Xander Bogaerts. And then so, therefore, my middle infield is going to – I took Anthony Volpe almost right after that. Again, beautiful. The later you take that – I know. A smile right there. The later you take that starter, the earlier you want to take that that backup. And yeah, the six reliever thing is interesting because that's I think less than most people, or at least than I think it's a really good point, Bubba. Like even though starting pitching's such a crapshoot, you need to have those arms, you need to have that depth, or else once you start starting four or five relievers in a week over time, it's just losing so much. So again, the averages bear out that it's six relievers per team. If you've got, I mean, generally you want two to three closers, so you're only taking three save specs, or you're handcuffing, which is also an option. You can take someone, a good eighth inning guy behind that player. I'm thinking if you take an early Cade Smith, for example, maybe you back him up with like a Hunter Gaddis later on. But you're only taking kind of those three additional shots on relievers, those non-closer relievers. And I did the same thing when I first started drafting holds. It's like, these last 10 rounds, I'm just going to take a bunch of relievers. It's like, it doesn't work that well. And even if a bunch of them hit, then you've got like too many saves and doesn't work out too. So anyway.
Yeah, because that's the other point. Like this is how this shows. We're just kind of bouncing all over the place, but take notes if you care to. Like to your reliever point, you might have too many. You got to remember, this is where the draft tracker comes into play, and you can find these numbers a lot of places, not just us that has them. Like the 80th percentile number, it's a lot lower in DCs. It's a lot lower in 50s than in your fab leagues, because you're not, if once you have injuries, you're not like going out and getting a Nick Kurtz off the waiver wire. Some guys drafted him last year, don't get me wrong, but you're not finding those like boomer bust Chandler Simpson steals, like those kind of things to elevate the 80th percentile for the league. Like if everything's lower essentially than in your standard formats. I top of my head, I think saves was like around 60-ish, 60, 65. Like got you in the 80th percentile. Like actually, I have the 50s up.
I'll show for the YouTube crowd. I'll show this. So this is the team tracker. This is a tool that you get if you want to support the show and join the Patreon. You get access to this team tracker, and it gives you projections based on the target. So you, and it's custom with 12 team, 15 team, whatever. But yeah, it's got the targets based on last year's 80th percentile. But for me, and that's just projections. Garbage in, garbage out, with inputs equals the outputs. We talked about that last show. For me, I think the biggest use for this thing for drafting holds is you've got the kind of the positions, the reserve positions already kind of laid out for you. So you can slot those guys in, and just looking at my team, you can see I need roughly two more starting pitchers. I need two more relievers. I need a fourth catcher. I need roughly an infield spot. That could be middle or corner, depending on how I feel about those. And then it's got the outfield as well, which I always see. One of the more common mistakes I see as well is folks don't have enough outfielders. I see teams with like 9-10 outfielders, and it's just not enough when you're starting five. So that's another kind of benefit of this team tracker that is available for Patreon folks, is it does kind of help you kind of stay within those guidelines of how many players at each position I need to take. And it's got the targets. So
it's got the targets up there to kind of keep you in the ballpark, what you're going for, like what you have there. I think it says 66 saves, and a DC last year was 80th percentile.
Yeah.
So that's kind of back to my point. It's like, you know, it gives you on pace as well, which is clutch. So you have to know what your targets are per player. So a lot of good stuff in that regard. A shameless plugging, but it's a valuable tool. It's a very, very valuable tool. Back to the roster builds. So, you know, we're talking about catcher, first, second, short, third, corner, middle, five outfielders, starting pitching, relief pitcher, the whole cha-cha. Multi-position players. That's a big, big point in draft champions, especially not being able to get fab pickups, but injuries will happen. It's one of those where I think I was even more aggressive on them when I started playing. I still look for, like, it's more of a tiebreaker now for me with certain players. but it's a way to also, like, you can't, where the on the team tracker, you can't really put this in.
Yeah.
But if you want, you're drafting 50 players, Ryan. But in theory, if you have a second, third, and like outfield, now you have an extra second, third, and outfielder. So you have like 52 players, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of an angle. So when you are building, when you look at Ryan's, you know, you recommend 3 to 4, 3 to 4, so on and so forth. Well, one guy can cover like three of those, and it helps in a tremendous way as well.
It does. And you can move them around. What I do with the tracker, I actually took a failed mascot, Willie Castro, in this draft. Day. He's second, third outfield. So what I do is I put them in bold, and actually I will move him around depending on – I had him at second as my backup second baseman. I took Nick Gonzalez, so Nick Gonzalez was in my second baseman, and then I moved Willie Castro to third base. So, yeah, the multi-position guys, I mean, this is obvious stuff, I think, but, that's huge for draft and hold formats. And you know, not every multi-position is created equal. Like a second base shortstop, while good, is still just middle infield. I think the really nice ones are outfield, infield, but then also like middle corner. If you were able to get like a second, third base or what have you, that just helps so much more on coverage. I typically, when I say 3 to 4 players per those infield positions, I still only count the multi-position guys once. I can move it around to which position I want to put them in. But if I've got like 5 guys that are third base eligible, I still, you know, there's a decent chance I'm not playing a couple of those guys at third base. So it's a little bit kind of inflating my numbers to make me feel better, which I guess that's probably a good thing. But just be careful of that kind of overcounting multi-position guys, thinking you're good when you need to use them elsewhere.
Yeah, like it's. I just drafted this guy in my 50s, and I never thought I would. But then I looked at his numbers last year, and I looked at the flexibility, and he's a deep, deep player in the draft. But Javi Baez has shown up third base and outfield, so he got CIMI and outfield. Like, there will be weeks where he is in my lineup.
That's, yeah, and I probably shouldn't have laughed at you, but that's
where I was bringing it up. Yeah,
you've got the three positions, but you've also got playing time. We think, again, you don't know, but Javi Baez probably will play most of the season for Detroit. And while it's not the sexiest name out there, it's not a prospect, it's someone who is going to play and play at potentially three different positions. That's the type of draft and hold player I think that is. I don't want to say so, but I don't want to oversell Javi Baez, but. Taking that type of player over kind of the next hot prospect is, I'm always going to take Javi Baez.
Yeah. And that's like the other part. And we'll start doing some listener questions here in a minute. Like the prospect talk is how many yeah. talks do you want to, or how many risks do you want to take? Guys that we know are kind of hurt now, they might miss the first few months. Is it worth the risk? So on and so forth. Like, you and I are usually like pretty cautious with what we do in these deals. But it does, like, especially in a 12 compared to a DC, a 50 compared to a DC, a 50, you can take a few more chances just because your third or fourth options are a lot better than your options in a 50 or in a DC. But you still don't want to go overboard, is what I'm trying to get at.
Yeah. I mean, just I I've done research on this mostly last season. It's just that these prospects just typically do not work out. The prospect needs to come up at some point in the season, looking at you, Bubba Chandler drafters last season, and then B, like, they have to come up and hit right away. And so you just don't, those are two huge variables where if you're spending, and everyone's going to talk, you know, Nick Kurtz, point to the Nick Kurtz example. For every Nick Kurtz, there's so many more that don't do it. I mean, a perfect example for me right now, Kevin McGonigal is going ADP 255 roughly in draft and holds right after, like someone like Gleyber Torres, who just we know is going to play, we know is going to produce. McGonigal, while, you know, long-term upside is super bright, yada yada, he may not even be up till the second half of the season. And some of this ADP might have been, you know, before that news came out, but like, there's no way I'm going to take someone, even with the top 300 pick. Those picks are still super valuable in draft and holds, where I may even get a half season from him. And even that half season, what does that adjustment period look like? So I am much more, I will take prospects, but it will be kind of the less heralded prospects that have the best path to playing time. I think that's just as important for these draft and holds, just as important as what is the playing time, the team context outlook, as opposed to how good is the actual prospect himself. Prospect can be the best prospect in the world if he's playing in the minors.
Doesn't do a darn thing.
A new damn thing for you. So I'm very much, this should come to the surprise of nobody, but very much anti-youth, anti-kids, anti-prospect in these draft and holds. Unless there's just a very clear path. I know.
Yes.
I know.
Yeah, Jack Kags is mentioned, like the name that popped into my head that everyone was drafting very high last year, Kyle Teal. How'd that go? So like to your Nick Kurtz point, there's a ton that don't do a whole lot of anything. And we won't go player by player on what's good and bad, but that's what the Discord and other content is for. Let's do some questions here as it'll continue to filter out a lot of the stuff we'll want to talk about for this primer. These are all from our Patreon Discord members. Ricky Zito. He says, any correlation on team construction for the top 10 to 20 overall teams the last 5 years? Team construction for the first 30 picks, and how did that matter versus how much did hitting the last 30 picks help? So, like, building your team and taking your chances type question.
I have not found any, and I took a deeper dive into this last year again and a little bit less so this year, but it looked like the same trends. I did not find any kind of consistent trend between kind of the top, the cream of the crop and the overall versus everyone else, even over the last few seasons. So it really is, in my opinion, others may disagree with this, but to me, it really is just a picking the right players, but picking the healthy players. I think that's kind of the thing you will see teams. And again, we'll go through some of these top three teams where they did not get anything from their last 15 picks, but they nailed the first 20 rounds. There are other teams that got a late Nick Kurtz that got contributions from three or four guys in the last 10 rounds, and that covered up for a couple early misses. There's really no trend or one kind of path that seems to be more prevalent than another for these successful teams.
Yeah, just like top of my head by talking to so many people through the years on the shows that and then you going through rosters again last year, this year, and others, a lot of it comes down to the same things you see in fab leagues personally, because when you're the first 30 rounds is a regular fab draft for most. Not like you still do things different, but for the most part, you're trying to build out your start. Like in a perfect world, what you start your draft with, you don't want to take out the whole season. That's just the reality of the situation. That's who you want in there. So I think a lot of the things when you find winning teams, it's not so much the beginning of the end. It's a lot of the middle picks, like you talk about. Like, I'll bet you Nate Eovaldi is a corollary part on a lot of winning teams. A lot of those kind of guys that took those massive jumps that we've talked about in the main events and the OCs, I bet, and I haven't looked at it. I know you printed them up. We're going to get to those later, like the top three teams this last year. I bet you there's a couple correlating names. We saw some last year. We did the same exercise. Some very similar situations. And I don't know if, like, to your point, I don't think it's a strictly taking shots late or how they did early. It's you got to hit on those guys that succeed also, like that way outproduce their draft cost. And that'll be a theme you see in a lot of winning teams, period.
Yep.
How do we tackle certain positions? Catchers, closers, starters. Lucas Beery says, do you attack pitching differently in DCs from fab leagues?
Yes. So I do. I mean, number of ways we can go with this. I think one of the common themes, if you listen to any kind of podcast out there talking about draft and holds, is the reliever landscape, the reliever push up. If you want to get an established good closer, it will have to be in the first 3 to 4 rounds. So you just need to know, are you comfortable paying that price or not? I think my plan and what I've done so far this year is to not do that and take in kind of roughly 3 stabs at the closer pool. So the current draft I'm in, I took Daniel Palencia, Pete Fairbanks, and Kyle Finnegan in like rounds 10, 11, and Finnegan was maybe 19, something like that. Just want to give me more shots at it. But the reliever thing is real. The reliever inflation is real just because you cannot fab new closers as they come up through the season. So the closers that have the job and are good come at a premium. In terms of starting pitchers, I typically wait on starting pitching and take more volume in the middle rounds in starting pitching for these draft and holds, just because we are so damn far from the season that pitchers are going to get hurt. I'm not smart enough to know which ones are going to get hurt, but I'd rather have more shots at it in the middle rounds than have somebody in a first or second round that is my guy. Now that for me, that changes later in draft season, like in March, and they go through spring training. Like I know that the pitcher is healthy. I will take that first round, second round spec on a pitcher. But in general, and I'll probably have a team with, you know, Scooble, Skeens, or Crochet or whatever. But in general, I like to wait until really, I don't know, the fifth round ish to start taking pitchers. But I try and make up for what I don't take in the first four rounds. I try to make up for that with an extra starting pitcher or two in those middle rounds just to give me that volume and more shots at it.
Yeah, when it comes to pitching, it's a surprise of nobody. I wait more often than not. I think the earliest I'll go is like round four, usually round five. After the elite guys, it's really blobby to me. I think there's a lot of really good pitchers like in the rounds 5 through 10, and there's a lot of really good pitchers, and like and there's not a ton of differentiation to say, like, there is but there isn't, if you know what I, like, we've talked about all these pitchers.
Yeah,
so I'm fine like peppering certain regions and taking some elite hitting before I get to that point and try to like lock in batting average, because like when we're talking your backup players, top of your head, folks, how many people actually hit for a good batting average if you're not a starter in the Major League Baseball? Not many. So like you can find guys that'll hit you 10 to 15 homers. They'll steal you 15 to 20 bags here and there. Like, you can find those. You ain't going to find many guys hitting 280 or above. You're just not. So it's almost even more important to me in a draft and hold type format, 50s or DC, to focus on that early average than in a regular fab draft personally. I guess it, cause it can get away from you real quick in those situations.
Catcher wise, what's your general plan?
Usually I try to get one of the top like six-ish guys, and then I try to get one of the first catcher twos, if not the last catcher ones. Yeah. In the way I look at my builds. Now the 50 I'm in right now, aggressive catching grew. So I think I went like Dingler Teal. So I was at the back end of the, but like if I miss out on the elite and I get one of the back end ones, I double tap quick. Like I want two of them real quick. And then I'll come back. And after that, the thirds and the fourths, like I'm cool with a Fermin, a Bailey, just a guy that'll accumulate. They're going to play a lot. Yeah. I'll live in that world because I plan on playing Keel and Dingler or whoever else all the time. I have a ton of Dylan Dingler. He's usually my catcher too. I have a ton of him already. So, yeah, I'm usually pretty aggressive. I kind of treat them like relief pitchers personally, because I made the comment about, you know, batting average. Well, the backup catchers don't hit for average power or anything. They all suck. So I guess it's an even bigger just drain on the world.
Yeah, I the one thing I will add to that, and I'm generally in the same boat as you, it, kind of to bring this back to the prospect talk, I'm actually much more willing, and, yes, and most of the time I will spec on for my fourth catcher, it will be a prospect. Because if it doesn't work out, whatever. It's fine. I can take a zero at catcher if I have to. It's not the worst thing in the world, to what you were saying earlier. If it hits, and it hit for plenty of catcher prospects last year, Drake Baldwin, your guy, the Goose. If it hits, you can strike there. And you can, I mean, if it hits, you can use a catcher at utility. You can use a catcher at corner if they qualify there. That by the end of the season, as injuries mount, yep, don't fall into that mindset of catchers all suck, I'm only going to start two. There may be times where you can and will use a catcher at utility because they're healthy and they're good.
Yeah, we talked about it with Wilson Contreras and Salvi. Like, those, yep, are corner infields a lot of the year. But I was playing two other catchers. Like, that was just the reality of it. And I remember having Ivan Herrera as a utility player for multiple weeks because injuries add up so fast and you'll take what you can get. So if you have especially that prospect guy, because last year a lot of catching prospects came up. There's a few more potentially this year, not as many as last year, but there are some. Those are kind of almost, those are diamonds in the rough. Like, those are a beautiful, beautiful situation to your point. So we hit closers, start. We did a little bit of all that. John Wilder says, do you like to back up your closers with one of your last picks possible? So it is cuffing season. What are your thoughts on backing up your closers with these days? It can't be one of your last picks. It feels like you have to be much more aggressive.
Yeah. Yeah. That's kind of what I was going to add, is even one of your last few picks, you're looking at the seventh inning guys at that point, but especially in the 15 teamers, I do like to handcuff if I can. And actually for me, it's a tiebreaker. If I'm torn between two closers and closer A doesn't have a true eighth inning guy, closer B does, I will go closer B and then take that eighth inning guy a little bit later. And that's the tiebreaker for me. Now you have to time it right. And again, the risk with handcuff is, you know, the handcuff sucks, or they trade and get a closer, and then your handcuff, you just, you know, you, that's been a wasted roster spot. But I have plenty of times been bailed out by having my handcuff there. So I did mention the Cade Smith Hunter Gaddis thing earlier. I think that's a really good handcuff. I'm trying to think of other ones just off the top of my head, but it's not working this late.
The biggest night. One's Josh Hader, Brian Abreu, and the Trevor
Josh McGill. Josh Hader, Brian Abreu. That's those good backup. Yep. Yeah. What was the other one?
Trevor McGill, Abner Uribe.
Yep.
That makes sense. Those are the big ones right now.
Yep. So, and your opponents probably know that. You know, if they take Trevor McGill, be aware, you're probably, a lot of teams are going to try and pair him with Uribe. But I do think that's a strategy that can work. Obviously, it can backfire if the Brewers, I don't know, bring back Devin Williams and make him the closer. I'm just trying to think of stuff here. Then you've got two wasted roster spots. But in general, I think it is good to have at least one or two of your backup closers be a handcuff to your actual closer.
And I'll mention it one more time to your handcuff and the relief pitchers in general. There's a reason why these relief pitchers are going early. It's only like a third to a half of teams have like a quote unquote locked in closer at the moment. There's so many free agent closers. There's so many iffy situations. Mm-hmm. There's the Cardinals, the Marlins, the A's. There's so many teams that are like the White Sox. What are they doing? Will they sign someone? So after those elite guys go to you, it's almost like handcuffing. It's also like shooting in the dark, essentially. What are we doing here? And it brings in a whole other aspect. Like to your point, do I want Camilo Duvall is probably more valuable than trying to take a shot on whoever the White Sox closer is, as weird as that sounds.
Yeah.
Like just different games like that.
Sometimes I'll handcuff hitters. Like the example from the meatball draft that comes to mind is I took CJ Abrams early. I think Nassim Nunez is actually pretty good. Mm-hmm. And if Abrams ever went down, Nunez would be there. Nunez is like a late 30 round type guy. Yeah. So while he may not play while Abrams is healthy and you don't ever use Nassim Nunez, that means CJ Abrams stayed healthy and was good at you for shortstop. So that technically, even though it's a wasted backup shortstop spot, I didn't need it anyway. So you can do it on the hitting side as well.
Preservius says, is it punting saves a realistic strategy in draft and holds? If you just want to win your league, sure.
Yeah.
If you, zero chance you win your overall though.
Yeah. I mean, zero chance you're going to win your overall anyway.
Yeah.
0.1% chance. I should say. If you wanted to say screw it and not have to bother with saves, yeah, it's doable to win your league by punting saves. Obviously, you have to crush every other category, but it's doable.
Because that was like a discussion point in the meatball draft. It was a standalone league. You could definitely not be as impactful in saves, or you could wait and just try to be middle of the pack in saves and power up elsewhere. Like there's strategies where even not fully punting saves, but being like just shooting the get 5 points and saves, be the bottom third,
yep,
but dominate elsewhere could go a long ways as well. So ways to go about it. All right. Britton Allen asks, what's y'all's KDS preference? Do you try to mix it up or stay in the same range? I'm boring. I'm usually straight butter. I don't change too much. I like to think I know the player pool by the time real draft season comes around, and I roll with my punches, but I haven't done enough drafts to care yet.
Yeah, so same in terms of like 2026. Just for, again, new folks, KDS is, we should have mentioned this at the top, is Kentucky Derby style, where you basically get, there's a draft before the draft starts where you get to kind of prioritize where you want to start in the draft. And so you can rank your preferred slots from 1 to 15 if you want to. I don't know enough, about the 2026 pool yet to know like where I want to start doing it. But for draft and holds, I do like to mix it up if I can, just because it means I get different players in the first few rounds, and I do like to diversify. Yeah, the diversification, exactly. We like to kind of mix that up. All else being equal, I like being in the middle of a draft and hold, just personal preference. Some of these, sometimes if you're on the wheel of a draft and hold, it can be a day before it gets back to you. And I just lose a lot of like the rhythm and pace of a draft. So all else equal in a vacuum, I'd rather be in the middle, but I also don't want to draft in the middle every single draft and hold, because then I'm looking and making the same decisions between a lot of the same guys. So probably my next one, I'll maybe do 1 through 5 and then like 10 through 15 and then do the middle at the end, just to kind of mix it up and get different looks at the player pool in those early rounds.
In the end, I usually don't care, as I said, but what I have noticed, because I've been anywhere between like 8 and 14 in my drafts, if I'm doing 12s or 15s, and I'm tending to like the back end, because that early double tap, you can get some absolute studs and set the table, because like the back end of the second round, still good players, gets a little different, if that makes sense. Like people need to see it for themselves, obviously, but so there's something about that back end of the KDS I'm starting to like a little more at this point in time. But again, I haven't had to draft from the front yet, so I don't know how that fully plays out. It's more just watching the flow of the draft.
Yep. No, good question.
All right. Tommy D says, we all are going to look for some prospects in the later rounds. How many make sense when you need to balance against making sure you can cover for injuries? We'll stop there. He's at a second part, but the prospects question.
For me, again, just personal, probably more people do that. I stick to like two or three max prospects on a team, and it's pretty much all later rounds. And so, yeah, I usually don't go above three.
Two or three is probably a fair answer. What I would say is start with two. If you have three or like two, three, four, like whatever your preference of comfortable nature is of multi-position guys to fill in when guys get hurt, that leaves you an extra chance to take on something.
Good point.
I would. So basically how your drafts flow, and if like, hey, everyone else is taking the multi-position guys and you're pretty strict on these guys play these positions, you have less flexibility basically. So it's just about your personal risk tolerance and your team's flexibility is the way I'd go about it. That's the draft tracker comes into play on that. The other question, Tommy D says, also when deciding which prospects to choose, what are you looking at to determine if the prospect will make the majors and be usable?
Yeah. So for me, I kind of touched on this earlier, but for me, it's the path to playing time. How many innings, how many at-bats do they have in the high minors? What is the major league rotation? What does the major league depth chart look like for that player to have a chance at cracking it? Another thing I would add is I try to, and sometimes most of the time this doesn't work, but in theory it sounds good. Typically with a prospect, right, you're going to wait for them to get called up. So it's someone who you're banking on, hopefully for a second half contribution. So if I'm doing that, I also like to draft somebody who may be a little bit of an injury risk or a true old that I can hopefully count on in the first half of the season. Like I've taken Max Scherzer, to the surprise of no one, I've taken Max Scherzer and Justin Verlander on a couple of my early drafting olds. If you pair them with a prospect where in theory, Scherzer, Verlander are okay in the first half, maybe they start breaking down late, that could be the time where whatever prospect you bank on gets called up and can be that kind of fill in for the second half. Again, very hard to time that out, but I do like to kind of diversify. Like if I'm going to take these prospects, do I have someone who I can cover for the first half of the season while I'm waiting for this prospect to get called up?
No, that's very, very fair. Like what I like to use is shameless plug is I do an AL and NL preview with some very smart prospect people. So we go team by team.
Listen to Bench with Bubba the first week of December.
Yes. Like literally take notes. I take tons of notes in those shows. Like you'll find names that pop on those ones, but also like Martin Sokolsky puts out a lot of really good stuff. That's free on his Substack. And then I use James Anderson's top 400 prospects. So he'll put kind of his estimated ETAs. He's usually pretty good at that stuff for the most part. And those are kind of some of the things that I go to if I'm looking at prospects. But again, I'm not a very risky prospect guy, so I'm not the best one to ask for that as well.
I think what you can do, especially like on RotoWire, they've got on James's top 400, you can filter on ETA for just this season, see how many innings they've had, and you can sort it by K to walk in the high minors. And that's, you know, I don't care who what these names are. If you've pitched well and your ETA is this season and you've logged innings in the high minors, there's probably a decent chance you'll get a shot at some point in 2026. So I like to look at that list. The minor league leaderboard that I have has that as well. So I like to filter on that and sort it by the skills and get a bunch of weird names. Someone like, what the hell's his name? I just put him in my queue. Ty Johnson. For the Rays is one of the best strikeout minus walk rates of any high minors pitcher over 50 or 60 innings at the level. I don't even know who Ty Johnson is, but he seems to be close to the majors, and the Rays, you know, can manipulate that sort of thing. So
first off, the minor league leaderboard literally used that today for stuff, so it's very, very helpful. I use it all season for content, but to add on to the difference between NFBC 50s and draft champions, I don't have to think about Ty Johnson.
No, you don't.
Where Ryan has to think about Ty Johnson in his draft. So just another example of the differences between your two drafts. Now, maybe I should. Maybe he's a game changer, but I don't have to worry about it at this point in time.
Yeah. And when Ty Johnson actually gets called up later in the season, I will have forgotten that I actually looked him up in November. So there you go, too.
There you go. All right, some miscellaneous tips and tricks. Good point here. The NFBC draft room, Ryan. For those that are new to the draft room, a lot of you guys aren't. You've done gladiators or OCs or main events or all kinds of, maybe you've drafted holds already. But what kind of tips and tricks do you have? Because I know some people are still learning things in our Discord that they didn't know were there, because you can get the draft boards, the roster grids. There's a million things. So I'll let you start this off. The roster grid is the top of your point here.
Yeah, we both use this. I've mentioned this on previous shows, but, you know, may have been missed, whatever. One of my favorite tools. So if you're in the NFBC draft room, you have access to thing like a queue. We'll talk about that. But there's like a tiny little hidden thing. So you can pull up the draft board, and that shows kind of what you see on screenshots or whatever, just kind of a board of the picks. But what I have up all the time is what we call a roster grid. It's a little grid icon on the top right of your draft room. And that basically lays out all the picks, but it's by team and not by round. So you can get just a very quick, it doesn't work that well for like multi-position guys, as we talked about earlier. It doesn't have like copies of all those for every position they qualify at. But I like to use it, especially on pitching. How am I currently tracking? Because like the draft tracker I use, I'm just tracking my team. I'm not tracking every single team. But I can use the NFBC draft room roster grid to look roughly how am I doing in terms of how many pitchers do I have? How many outfielders do I have? I generally want to stay roughly with the draft because every draft can be different. I generally want to stay either in the middle or, like I said earlier, I tend to wait on early starting pitching. So I actually, one of my goals throughout the draft is to be the team with the most or one of the most pitchers at any given time, because I do know that I did not take any kind of premier starters in the first four rounds. So I want to be kind of ahead of the league in terms of volume of pitchers. So that's how I use it. But the roster grid, I think you have it up all the time when you're drafting too. It's a great way to see kind of what you're doing position wise versus the rest of the draft.
Yeah. When I'm drafting, I have the draft room, I have the draft board tab up, I have the draft grid or the roster grid tab up, to your point, more than anything is to make sure I'm keeping up with the draft, or when I'm using, because in the other tab I have up is the draft tracker. But maybe I'm just missed something, like, oh shoot, I actually am short at this position. Let's like get a little more on this before the player pool completely shrinks. Essentially, it keeps that in mind, because you know the rest of the league already has 2 second basemans or something, and it's like, okay, let's maybe double tap soon, otherwise I'm gonna be really hurting at this position. Just gives me those kind of ideas. It's more of a guide to go through. So all the tools are there, and it's very, very helpful. It's color coded, so it fits the eyes. You know, Bloom loves his color coded grids, so that's a plus as well. So yeah, good stuff.
Another tip I've got for the draft room is, so there's your general queue, so you can and recommend setting a queue, because you just never know when life's going to happen and you miss the email that you're up or whatever. Always have someone in your queue. Do as I say, not as I do. I drafted Emmanuel Class A in my first draft and hold because I did not have a queue. And it was a 39th round, so not the end of the world, but I did not have a queue. And yeah, I got rewarded with Emmanuel Class A. So there's a general queue you can use. Something that I don't know if people think exists, and this is especially useful on the wheel, is you can do round specific queues. Yeah. So I don't use it a lot, like when I'm in a draft, in the middle of a draft, but like, say for example, you're on the wheel or you're near the ends of one of the drafts and you want to take one outfielder and one pitcher. If you do one queue, there's a chance that you get two outfielders and you don't get a pitcher, or two pitchers and don't get an outfielder, just depending on what the teams do in front of you. So you can do what and there's a drop down right there, round specific queue. So I could say this next round, I will list out all my outfielders. And then the following round, I will list out all my pitchers. It's a nice way to be able to kind of avoid that, oh crap, I ended up with two guys I didn't want when I only wanted one of the two type of deal. So you can do round specific cues. It's a nice way to be able to do that. And kind of to that point too, you can go on auto. Probably should have mentioned that at the beginning. Like if you know you're going to be gone for a while, or you think, you know, you're sleeping in on the on the East Coast, and you're gonna or on the West Coast, and you're gonna get missed. You can go on auto, but you can do it for the next one round, the next two rounds. You don't have to do auto for forever. So a lot of times, what I'll do if I think I'm gonna be up overnight, I'll set my queue. I'll do auto for next one round, and it'll pick me overnight. But I don't stay on auto after that. So that's another kind of nice thing you can do there.
Yeah, the queue, I guess accessibility is very, very nice. I use my queue just to basically, I go through the player pool for like 100 to 200 picks and just start clicking guys just to keep them on my radar. So when it is my turn to draft,
yep,
I can just scroll. It's a lot easier to know, like, okay, these are the guys I want. Like, it just keeps the draft moving along, especially if I'm busy and I get the email. Like, okay, I can pull out my phone and pull it up real quick and, okay, make a pick and we move. So it's how I utilize the queue quite a bit, is to just kind of keep the players of interest in range there. You have a final part there that's very important. I actually saw someone at first pitch in the best ball draft that I monitored import this. So why don't you mention this one? Because I don't even know how to do it, but I know it's been done many times.
Yeah, I actually, it's on my list to do a video of this to show you guys how to do it for the Patreon. But you can basically import a draft list for the entire draft pool. And I do that every time I start a new draft. And so what I do is typically I'll go to the NFBC ADP page and grab like the last 10 drafts and download that. And then you can basically just import that into your draft room. And that is now your default rank of players. It's just a nice way to be able to, because again, I'm staring at my queue right now, the top guy available, Emmanuel Class A. So it just prevents like really bad picks if you time out and you don't have a queue. But it also, you know, you have a pulse on what the latest movement is and you don't have to scroll down too far. So being able to import and load kind of ranking list is the official term on NFBC. You can import that and have that be kind of your default. And I think that's super handy, especially later in drafts when you're in the 30th, 40th round, you don't know who half these guys are. It's nice to have that just kind of general thing ordered by recent movements. Yeah, I'll do a video on how to do that. It's not that tough.
Yeah, it's a very useful thing that I should probably utilize more of, but I just, like I said, I set my queue and roll around, but it'd probably be better to have it in the order I prefer. It'd probably go a long ways in making that work, but I did witness that in person at FPAS. It's pretty cool to see people utilize that. I didn't
know that. Nice.
Yep. So good stuff there. Anything else on the draft room you want to mention? That should cover most of it.
I don't think so. I mean, anything I didn't bring up, I don't know. There's a chat in the draft room that sometimes is good, sometimes isn't, but no, that's pretty much it. There's a little gearbox on the top right of the draft room. You can have it email you as often or as not often as you want. There's a sound effect setting if you work in an office. turn that mother off.
Yes.
You know, we've all been there.
That happened to me at gymnastics on Saturday. Went ding ding as I'm sitting there with the parents. That was fun.
Yeah, you're giving a PowerPoint at work. Yeah. You are on the clock. You can turn off sound, which I think you should always turn off sound.
You should always have sound off. It was the first round of that new draft, and yeah, that was fun. That was a good one. Everyone was looking around like, what was that? Oh, nothing to see
nothing
here.
Nothing to see. Yeah, I've always got it off. And for me, I always have, in terms of like when to email, there's all these different options. I just have it email me on my turn. So I get the email right away and I just go in and make my pick. So.
I do on deck and my pick just to give me a heads up type deal. Colin M says, looking at this year's player pool, what are the last few positions you'd feel most comfortably filling last of your starters and not including util, catcher 2, outfield 5, corner, middle? So catcher, first base, second, third, shortstop. Essentially he's asking which position are you good with your starter being your last starter?
Shortstop. It's always shortstop.
Yeah, I like to be aggressive and take an early shortstop. I've been finding my way, if I don't go like J-Ram or Machado, I've been waiting on third base a little more than I'd like. But for me, it's second base. I wait quite a bit on second base, it feels like. Yeah. That's one
Yeah.
Because I'm good with the late second baseman, and then like the Otto Lopez is the Chase Mydroths. Like Luis Garcia is going late, so you can use him as a backup. Like that's what I'm saying. If I double tap him quick, I'm cool waiting on second base.
Yeah. I would, to kind of bring this full circle, no matter, I just haven't had enough reps yet. And like I said, in my current draft, I took Ketel Marte, so I don't pretty much have to worry about second base for a little bit. But I just think whatever position you wait on, that should probably be your first reserve position.
Yeah, it's either second or third for me. And like I said, then I start double tapping quickly. So, and I make sure there's a lot of depth at those positions right away. We go from there. All right, let's look at it. Let's check out the top three teams, Ryan. We'll go through this real quick, or at least the top team or so, and see how they did, kind of see if we can pick up any trends. So the overall champion in 2025 was James Tominey, who just ran away with everything, Bloomfield. It was quite impressive to see. And he kicked things off. He had the seventh pick of the draft. Ryan's pulling the picture up here shortly. There it is. But it goes Scooble, J-Rod, Machado. DeGrom was huge for him. But when you're going down the board, there's Sonny Gray for all you haters out there.
and his 14 wins.
Yep. Sucky. There's Nathan Eovaldi. So there's one. I figured we'd see him. And George Springer. Those are the two common in Buxton. So, yeah, he's got the big boys that, again, so it's not the early picks. It's not the late picks. It was around 13, around 18, around 19. Ryan's favorite section to talk about, the middle rounds,
man. So, Dansby, Eovaldi in the 12th and 13th, a late Kenley Jansen. Like, that's beautiful stuff. I've pulled this up. So, what I did is I just listed out the Tominey's top 50 or top 50, his entire team, but also put kind of the end of season Rasball player rater rank on there and color coded that one. So you kind of quickly see roughly where the busts were, where the breakouts were. And just looking at Tommy, we won't go through his entire team, of course, but like basically his top 14 picks are all some shade of green, which is you did not like, you maybe missed on Ozzie Albies and Anthony Volpe in the fifth and ninth round, but those weren't disasters. The first true bust from Tominey was a 15th round Jake McCarthy. And so that's how really and then an 18th round Byron Buxton, a 19th round George Springer. So did not miss at the top.
42nd round Ben Rice.
Yeah. We'll get to the end here at the end. But nailed those middle rounds with very few busts. Of course, this guy won the overall, so that's going to happen. But the back half of the draft, rounds, you just mentioned Ben Rice in the 42nd round. Like that's the type of thing that works. Dennis Santana in the 45th round a year ago, David Bednar. And that's what Tominey did. He took Bednar in the 10th round and handcuffed, I think, was the strategy. Handcuffed Bednar with Dennis Santana. And maybe did he get a little bit lucky that Bednar got traded and became the Yankees closer, thus leaving an open spot for Dennis Santana to be the Pirates closer? Sure, but he played that handcuff game perfectly. Will Vest in the 47th round. That's tremendous. I mean, there were a ton of misses in the 40th round. Didn't really hit anybody from round 34 to 41. But again, I think that's a learning too. You can miss on a bunch of these guys, especially in the late rounds. If you get a late Ben Rice, Dennis Santana, Will Vest, all 42nd round or later, and you don't miss early, that's why this team was so good last year.
Yeah, two of those guys didn't even get a Rasball player ranking because they didn't do anything. Brian Ramos was like past 1,300. So the late picks, like we talked about, most of them aren't going to pay off unless you like strike gold, but he struck gold with three of them, which filled the elite start off right away. And it's like I said earlier, it's in a perfect world, you're top, 20 picks, you're playing all season long. And by the looks of things, he got to play his top 20 picks almost all season long, which helps a ton. So then when you have those extra picks come around, that goes a long, long way. He put it together a hell of a draft. Cause even if you look at like Bo Naylor had his moments late in the season, Luis Severino on the road was actually pretty good. The bus driver, Roman Anthony had his window before he got hurt. Like there's even a bunch of dudes that might not be like green that were super productive for him at certain points in the season that you can kind of pinpoint where he did get Kyle Teal. Like, man, he hit some value catching between Bo Naylor, Kyle Teal.
Early Miguel Amaya, even though he's in red, started.
Those are his first three catchers too. So he waited on catchers. So to the question, like, do you go early? Like, he didn't, and it worked out. Now we'll talk about the next guy, and he went early on catchers, and it
definitely the next one because
something different.
Because you're not going to find trends from like some of these just looking at one team. I think the bigger takeaway is like you can win with so many different ways. So go ahead, Josh Peterson.
He also had Nathan Eovaldi. but he didn't have Springer, didn't have Buxton. He did have Cal Raleigh, which comes in a big way. And he actually took Cal Raleigh after Yainer Diaz. Peterson had the eighth pick in the draft. So he's right in the middle, just like Tominey was. So maybe that's something to keep in mind for this that season. And obviously he comes to change. But he also did very well in the first 15, 16 picks. He had two duds in Strider and Tovar. Other than that, they all did pretty darn good. And then he had some nice pitching backups as the draft went on. But similar to Tominey, obviously Tominey's guys were even better. And that Springer-Buxton combo, Tominey ran away with it. It wasn't even that close. And you can tell just by that Springer-Buxton combo in like the 18th and 19th round, that'll catapult you through a lot of stuff.
Interesting thing with Peterson's build. So yeah, we mentioned with Tominey, he went three late catchers. Peterson, fifth and sixth round, like you said, Yainer Diaz and Cal Raleigh. So many different ways you can do it. Super interesting thing here. Three of the first of his first four picks were pitchers. Zach Wheeler, Edwin Diaz, and George Kirby. And I mean, George Kirby,
two catchers after, good Lord.
Yeah. So he started third base, started J Ram, and then three pitchers, two catchers. And like George Kirby wasn't all that. His fourth pitcher was Spencer Strider, wasn't all that. So they were actually, unlike Tominey, Peterson missed some early picks. Ezekiel Tovar in the ninth and Strider in the eighth. But hate to keep going back to these middle rounds, but rounds 10 through 16, Arozarena, Bogarts, Carlos Estevez led the league in saves. Taylor Ward, 30 homers, 100 RBI. Evaldi, Yandy Diaz, Jesus Luzardo. Further down, Aroldis Chapman in the 20th round. So it's for as much as, you can miss a couple of these early picks, if you nail these middle rounds and you get some of these breakouts, Matthew Boyd in the 21st round finished 67th overall. It can more than make up for it.
Also goes to show you his 26 through 50.
Yeah.
About three or four guys that were good. Everything else, like majority, like I said, with Tominey, he used a lot of his throughout the season. If you look at picks 26 through 50, I can't physically think of many times you used a lot of these players, period. Unless right. You were just completely desperate for something. So Peterson was fortunate. Well, that's weird because Kirby was hurt. Wheeler got hurt. So he had to use some guys. But yeah, his last half of the draft was not elite by any means, and he still finished second overall, which is awesome.
Yep, exactly. Kyle Stowers in the 40th. Noah, your guy, ratio man, Noah Cameron in the 43rd. Well, and also ratio man, I guess, Clayton Kershaw in the 39th. Andrew Benintendi in the 34th. That's pretty much it. Maybe a couple useful weeks from Yaz, but that's pretty much it in the back half of this draft. Tampa Bay Ray legend, Jake Fraley in there. Just throw that in there. But again, we're not hating on this team by any means. Finished second out of 5,000. We're just trying to explain, like, you can miss on a ton of these picks and still compete. Like, missing on these draft and hold picks is kind of the name of the game. It's going to happen. It's just, how do you do in those middle rounds? How many of those late guys do you hit? And ultimately, how fortunate are you with injury luck, especially early on?
And then real quick, we'll go over to the third overall team, John O'Brien. He was the 11th pick. Interesting to see here. He got J-Rod in the first round, whereas Tominey got J-Rod in round two. So, I don't know what pick he is. The 11th's the ranking. I'm an idiot. So I don't know where these guys picked up. Just realized that now. He got the J-Rod Lindor start, which is beautiful. But then Cease is his ace. That obviously didn't. It was okay, but not great. But O'Neill Cruz, a lot of issues there. But again, he had Nady Evaldi. We see another Carlos Estevez to the point we saw earlier. But then he has a lot of guys that weren't even playing this season. Tim Anderson. I know
Ringifo. We'll go over.
I'm jumping. Ringifo. He has a bunch of what took place here, guys, and he still finished there, which is a credit to the way his team panned out. But then, like, the Kyle Manzardos of the world, and Ramon Laureano was clutch, Drake Baldwin, Noah Cameron. Maybe there's a trend there. I don't know. But the biggest trend I get out of the three, besides Nate Eovaldi and all three of them, Ryan, is
seriously, all, man. Let's go.
All three of them. Like, let's just say top 20 picks, like his is a little different, but top 20 picks for the most part paid off. And yeah. I know that sounds simple and like no duh, but it just goes back to, like, especially in the DCs, the 15 teamers, taking that safety net kind of goes a long way. It's like, you know, he went with like a Cody Bellinger, a Shota Hoffman, Luis. I guess they're not all safety nets, but they all panned out. Brian Wu was tremendous, but it's just one of those deals that he ran really pure. His pitching was outstanding. Looking at that even more.
Yeah, I think outside of Evaldi, but it kind of relates to Evaldi, the biggest, at least the common theme among these first three teams that I see as well is, I hate to keep saying it, but is those middle rounds. Like, there's just a lot of, and on O'Brien's team here, the 10th round Brian Wu, 12th round Christopher Sanchez, 13th round Evaldi, 14th round Carlos Estevez. Like, that's a whole staff that you drafted outside the top 10 rounds.
And you used them for most of the season, too.
Used them pretty much, yeah. Yeah, for, I mean, Evaldi, not so much, but the rest of them, yeah. And started with Dylan Cease. I had an early O'Neill Cruz. Like, so, I mean, again, don't want to kind of nitpick or dive too much into these teams specifically. It's just, I think there's just so many different ways to win at this. Where, yeah, the best team did not miss at all the first 14 picks. Some of these teams that finished second and third overall out of, again, 5,000 teams, they had some early misses. Mm-hmm. You know, it's going to happen, but it goes back to the kind of the overall team construct. How do you fill depth? I'm sure these guys had a ton of volume, counting stats, runs, RBI to prop that up. And some of that sure is injury luck, but also it's how do you build your team to kind of be redundant in as many different hitting positions as possible.
And I'll throw out there is he's back to no catchers, really. Jeffers in round 17, Miguel Amaya in round 24, Jake Rogers. He only drafted, and then Drake Baldwin. Baldwin carried him, and that was his fourth catcher in round 41. So, again, just pointing out there's lots of ways to build. Lots of ways.
There's a Lance Lynn on here.
Yeah, Lance Lynn, Tim Anderson.
Vaughn Grissom.
Jason Foley. He had five, and there's one other one. Where was it? No, I guess it's just Juan Brito. There was five empty spots, so he basically had a 45-man roster and still finished there. That's impressive. Yep. Like looking back on 20th round, Andrew Vaughn actually became quite clutch.
Yep.
In a 15-team league, like those are the kind of things. Like the player rater shows Vaughn at a 375, but when he started using Andrew Vaughn,
exactly
more than a 375, so you got to also correlate those when you're looking. Like, that's why we're not going to dig super deep in these rosters. They obviously utilize these guys to have pinks and reds, but it's when you utilized them. And then just like a Ramon Laureano around 37 was humongous. Drake Baldwin, like those are big boy carrying picks right there.
Yep, absolutely.
Kudos to all of the winners, obviously much better than I. And I couldn't tell you how to win an overall if I you know.
I mean, the purpose of that was just to show different ways of winning. But like, yeah. I certainly don't expect. I was actually late into last season, I had a team that was in the top 20 overall. And it was like my best team ever. But there's just so many different teams. And I remember looking at, I would fall down to 35th in a day and then back up to 20th. You bounce around like crazy just because there's so many teams. So I don't really play these things for the overall. I play them A, to prep, B, to pass the time in the winter, but also C, they're just fun drafts and it doesn't cost you that much in season outside of just setting lineups. Like fab be damned. You don't have to do any fab with these leagues. You just set your lineups Monday, Friday, and you're off and running. So quickly becoming, if not already, is my favorite format. Just draft and hold in general.
Yeah, draft and hold's pretty sweet. The auction has become, it's only been a few years, but I just love the freaking auction. It's
yeah, that we're going to set up this year where it's basically an auction draft and hold. You auction your starters. And that you're starting 23, and then the last 27 picks is traditional draft and hold. Like that's money.
That's the sweet spot.
That's the sweet spot. Now you can't do this auction slow, right? You've got to be there for 4 hours or whatever. But
you can slow the rest of it. So
you can slow the rest of it, and most importantly, you don't have to fab it.
Yep, exactly. So. Well, we'll wrap it up there. Hopefully that got you guys mostly everything you need. If you have any questions, make sure you hit us up either in the Discord, on Twitter. You can email us. Ryan, what's our email again?
BubbaBloomPod@gmail.com.
I didn't want to mess it up. I know you've mentioned it before, so you know it better than I, but you gave some final thoughts. Do you have anything else for the listeners before we
No, I'll probably go ahead and post. I had some kind of graphs in the show notes as well. I'll probably post that for Patreon folks just so you have something to look at, as well as some of these teams and that sort of thing. But we will talk more player specific stuff next show. We'll do a post 500 ADP episode. Our favorite picks at each position. So that'll be coming out on Thanksgiving or the day after.
Yeah, it depends on when I click the button for it to come out, but we will record that on Wednesday.
Depends how many noons later, on Thursday and how much turkey you have on Thursday.
You know me, my friend. You know me quite well. With that being said, make sure you follow Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, on Patreon at patreon.com/BubbaBloom. I'm at BD Entrick. Everybody have a happy and safe Thanksgiving. Thanks for listening. Catch you guys next time.